This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
Well, good morning and welcome to the last breakout of the week. Hopefully you have this much brain space left to do a little bit more thinking and talking and learning together. So I, for a very brief introduction, I am a lower elementary teacher and currently teaching first grade at Shalom Mennonite School in Lancaster area. And I enjoy thinking deeply about my students and how they learn. And I especially care for the students with learning challenges or behavior challenges. And so, you know, as a teacher, our main job is academics and teaching the learning part that needs to happen. But teaching is also life on life. And so we also need to be thinking about the whole child. And we all, I mean, I assume you're here because you've encountered a student that maybe struggles with behavior challenges of some sort. And so we're going to hope to maybe just ask questions, think a little bit, problem solve a little bit together this morning, and hopefully give you some ways to think about how to approach challenging behaviors. So perhaps you've said this yourself, or perhaps you've heard another student say something like this: "My student just doesn't pay attention. He often is distracted and fidgets with things. He doesn't stay focused on his work. His behaviors are driving me crazy." They might add that part to it. So my question for you is, why might that be? What are the possible reasons that a child might be struggling to pay attention in your class? Okay. So I would like you to think about that. And I would like you actually to, we're going to pull out the brainstorming right off the bat here. I'd like you to turn to someone nearby and see if you can come up with a few ideas. What possible things could be going on? All right, if I could interrupt your conversations. So I'm curious, what do you think? There's a lot of possible answers here. So what is something that could be the why? Go ahead and call it out. Okay, so he's worried about something else that's coming up. Mm-hmm. Great. Someone else? Ah, maybe he's staying up till midnight every night. Maybe he skipped breakfast.
His clothing feels
Say it again.
His clothing feels scratchy.
Mm-hmm. Trauma, okay. How, can you say more about that? How might
it's
that really impact?
It comes out in so many different ways.
Depending
on the trauma, what kind of trauma.
Okay, so we'll talk more about that, but yes, trauma of some sort.
Sometimes there's things going on at home that you do not know about, and it's just heavy on the student's mind, and they're just not with you.
It's very true. Yes, and it kind of goes with worrying about something, and it may merit being worried about things that are going on at home.
It might be boring.
Yeah. are they bored with the lesson? Are they thinking about something else that's more interesting to them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can you say a little bit more about that?
You may appear boring to the student.
Okay, yeah. So they might not have interest in the topic, but maybe if you're just talking and they're checking out because it's boring.
If they're a visual learner and you're doing like a lecture or something.
Okay. So, and that maybe again goes to teaching strategy. Maybe they could use some, rather than just talking to them, they could use visual, more interactive kinds of instruction. Good.
He doesn't have any self-motivation.
Okay. So is it possible that, he's not interested in this, he's not motivated, and that could be for various reasons. Why he's not motivated, or she is not motivated?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know when y'all came to this, if you're thinking we're going to talk about ADHD or not. But yes, so maybe there is ADHD going on. Okay, so maybe he's confused. Maybe it's too difficult. Maybe this math lesson is so beyond him that he can't connect with it and is checking out. Mm-hmm. So maybe he was never taught to stick at a task. Could it be a training thing? Like he needs to be trained how to stick at his task? It could be. I mean, that's a fair option, right? You got a lot of what I was thinking of. And so you're thinking well about maybe the possibilities that could be. I think one thing that's helpful to think about is this a one-time difficulty with paying attention? Like, is it just this one day, or is it an ongoing? That feels very different, right? If it's a one-time, or it's ongoing. And there is another piece that I've been thinking of that you haven't mentioned yet. I wonder about the classroom environment a little bit, right? So, is the classroom distracting? Are there, I don't know, too many pictures on the wall or something happening outside the window? Or is it just kind of disruptive and a little bit chaotic in the classroom? That can feed into the student not doing well. So it's great ideas. And I think I want to think a little bit about what is this inattention and this hyperactivity that I have in the title, okay? All of these behaviors are on a continuum, right? So I'm assuming that all of you were feeling inattentive at some point this week, right? Like, were you like ever thinking about what's for lunch coming up, or you're thinking about something else when it's getting a little bit long? Maybe you were feeling restless this week, or you feeling like you need to go out and get some exercise and tired of sitting for so long. And so those are normal, right? And there's a progression that we have as teachers, we need to work to figure out, is this normal or is this actually a problem? And where does it shift? Where does it shift into that is tricky to know. So inattention, what I mean by inattention is being highly distractible both by external or internal events, things that are going on, like they're hungry, they're sick, they're worried, maybe they're excited about something that's coming up. And inattention can be happening where the student is sitting perfectly still, right? There's no like excessive movement, but in their mind, there's so much going on that this is preoccupying them and they are not able to get their learning done. It also includes an impaired working memory, which again is just connected to many competing thoughts, can't remember the task they're supposed to be doing. And it's not that they didn't understand what they're supposed to do, it's that they have so many competing pieces that they lose track of what they are to be doing. And sometimes this looks like, or it could look like, a student who they have this exciting story they want to tell you, and they're in the middle of the story, and all of a sudden they forget what the story was about. If this happens a lot all the time, it's like in their mind, they suddenly like got distracted by something else, and it jumped them to another place. So that's one way that I think about inattention. And then hyperactivity, this is maybe what we think of as students restless, constantly moving, excessive talking and interrupting, and then rapid decision making and zero self-control. And so what ADHD is when these symptoms are taken to an extreme that they actually impair my ability to function in life and in school. And this would happen both at home and at school as well. As we interact with our students and we encounter behaviors of some sort, we have a choice as a teacher or different ways that we can approach it. So we can react to the behavior by jumping to conclusions, by saying, my student is bad, he's not trying hard enough, and he deserves these consequences. His parents aren't training him properly at home, and they need to fix it. Right? We can jump to these kinds of statements, these kinds of responses that really don't get us anywhere. They lead to frustration on the teachers' and students' parts, and really it kind of displays a spirit of blame and condemnation, saying that kind of it's the student's fault. And that would be reacting to whatever the challenge is. The better approach is to respond to these behaviors, which is why I titled the session today as I did. If we think about seeking to understand this behavior, asking questions, and the question that I think that we should be asking is, what is this behavior communicating to me? So a behavior, children really aren't out to be bad, right? Or to misbehave or to goof off. I think that behaviors can communicate a whole host of different things. Maybe they're starving for love and attention, and so whenever they goof off over here, then they get the teacher's attention. Okay? Maybe when they have to stay in a recess, they're getting more attention from the teacher, but they're craving this love. Or maybe it's communicating that this reading is really hard for me, and I feel really frustrated, and if I do some sort of behavior that I'm not supposed to do, then I can avoid having to do this assignment, because then maybe I'll have to go back here, or like it can be a way to try to get out of a hard task. Sometimes behaviors are maybe communicating like, I actually don't know how to do what I'm supposed to do. We sometimes think that a student will behave if they want to, and when we think about it that way, we will approach it with, well, I need to make them want to. Or we can think about it as children will behave if they can. And so we have to think about, yeah, what's this behavior communicating to me? And trying to investigate what is going on. This leads to communication and trying to find possible solutions. It displays a spirit of grace and compassion and humility. And so being curious, asking why. Why might this be happening? And not just saying, what should the student do differently, but what could I, as the teacher, do differently here to try to come up with or to try to help in the situation? So I would like us to look at some of these causes, possible causes, because I want us to grow as problem solvers. Okay? When we are encountering a student who, I don't know, is just fiddling with things excessively, or I don't know, rocking on their chair or something, or their life is in chaos, they cannot keep their things organized, or they're excessively talking, any of those kinds of problems, I want us to be able to problem solve and think about, well, what could it be? So yes, it could be a training character thing, but I would like to propose that it's much less often that than we think. You know, or that we tend to jump to that as we need to train them, and we need to, maybe if we discipline them, that it will fix the problem. And there are times that that's true, but I don't think it's as often as we think. If I have a student who is struggling with inattention to some level, one of the first things I think that we should do as teachers is to take a look at ourselves and our classroom and ask ourselves questions like you see on your handout here. Is my classroom environment calm, organized, predictable, productive, versus loud, chaotic, disorganized? And I have seen students go from one classroom to another with different levels of structure and order, and their behavior looking just completely different. And I think sometimes it comes back to, like, they need the structure and the order and that safe environment that they can actually bring order to their inner chaos, maybe, that's going on. And so, you know, am I the teacher present and engaged? Is there a good classroom culture going on here? And how can I, as a teacher, work to enhance the classroom environment to help out my student that is very disorganized or whatever is going on for them? So just some strategies here, some responses. And these are maybe, it might feel a little bit simple or simplistic, I'm not sure. But we need to keep our rules simple, clear, and consistent. How can I eliminate the distractions in my classroom? If this student really struggles with watching things go by the window, can I move their desk to another place in the room that would be helpful for them? Maybe a student will do better in the front of the room. Maybe he will do better in the back of the room. And just thinking about what modifications can I make here? I can, if time and like getting things accomplished is a problem, I can work on teaching time management and teaching them how to have a sense for time, how to work toward a goal. And we should do some of these training things. We should try them. They should be the first thing we try, right? So this up here is something I thought I'd bring just to show you. This is called a time timer. And it is really fun because you can say, well, we have 15 minutes to do this. And you put it here. And the timer will go down very slowly. And in 15 minutes, it will ding. So it will go. And I have found it really helpful for students that struggle to have a sense for how much time they have. They can actually watch it as it gets lower and know that they need to be finished when the time is up. So we have 50 minutes until this is over. I mean, until the session is over. So I'll just let you see that, and it'll like gradually go down. And, you know, are there ways for us to teach our students how to manage their time, how to manage their materials? So another piece is, you know, if a student is just, all their materials are everywhere, teach them how to organize their binder, how to organize their desk. And if a student really struggles with inattention or with ADHD or these kinds of behaviors, they're going to need a lot of support in that. But we should still be trying to teach them how, and giving them those tools. A strategy also that has been really helpful for me, when it's a list of things that a student needs to do, and, you know, maybe they need to finish this workbook page and write these spelling words, and there's a list of things they need to do, we can write it up on the chalkboard. But I have found it really helpful for students to actually give them a little slip of paper or of some a checklist of some sort that they actually put it on their desk, and it is there, and they can look at it and be reminded exactly what they need to do next. And you can teach them how to look at their checklist, read the first one, cross it off when you're finished, read the second one, cross it off when you're finished. And I would have done this with a whole group of third graders and taught all of them how to do it. And it essentially said like the same thing every day, pretty much. I mean, it was slightly different, but some of my students, there were a few students that struggled with ADHD who looked at it every single time. Like they did the first thing, they checked it off, they turned it in, then they would look. Even though it said the same thing as it did yesterday, they would look and use that as a prompt. And so when a student struggles with all the things going on in their mind, they have difficulty, like they'll get one thing done, but they'll forget like what were all the things that were said to do. And this can just be like a prompt to help them. It's like a tool to teach them to do that, because many students don't automatically think like that and know how to check the things off the list. And we should, just call our students to attention, increase our proximity, presence, circulating often. These are basic classroom management kinds of things, okay? But I guess I want to propose that we need to make sure we have this in place, that we have a structured, safe, organized classroom environment before we start blaming a student for being disorganized or goofing off. Does that make sense? So I think looking at our classrooms first, and when a student's mind or life is chaotic, they need this kind of structure and in their classroom. Going on, cause number two, unrealistic expectations. So what do I mean by this? I wonder sometimes, the questions I have on yours are my expectations for the classroom behavior actually realistic based on the child's age? I think sometimes in our schools we have pretty high expectations. And somehow in our minds we think that a classroom with all the students sitting in straight little rows, perfect little angels, is what we want. Is that what you kind of envision, like you want them all perfectly on task? Is that like actually realistic? Like I feel like in a first grade classroom, you have all these 6 and 7 year olds, there should be like a happy buzz. There should be kind of like, there should be energy there. There shouldn't be like you can hear a pin drop when you walk in the room. Like that's not the goal, right? We want that, they're children. And so I think, yes, we want the structured environment, but we also have to be careful that we're not unrealistic in our expectations. And how long am I expecting my students to sit still from one thing to another? Am I giving them opportunities to move around and get up? Think about it, all summer long, they're running, playing, free as a bird, right, at home. They're used to just talking whenever they wish, and they come to school and we're like, sit still right here. Don't move into your work. Like that's not what we want. And so just I think to do a self-check for ourselves, and one of the strategies that I think students that are hyperactive or need to move, they just need us to give them opportunities to move all day long. So it's hard to fit that in, but this is how it looks a little bit for me. Or this is how I think about it, is every class that I teach, like we have math class, we always stand for review. And we always have some kind of review game where we're moving around, or at least we're out of our seats. And then we go to phonics, and we stand up, and we do motions, and we do our review out of our seats. And I know I'm an elementary teacher, so that's elementary teachers are good at that. I think that even older students need to get up and stretch too. You all need to get up and stretch sometimes, right? And so it also looks like in the middle of the afternoon, we kind of have a slow spot between like reading class and penmanship. And every day, it's like our rhythm that we always get up and have like 5 minutes of exercises as a class. And by that, it means like everybody stands up and I'm like the director and like I teach them to do it silently, but we do jumping jacks and wiggle our fingers and all sorts of funny, they do push-ups sometimes, hopping, giving them all a chance to move around and kind of refresh our brains and be able to transition to the next thing. And are my students, like, are your students getting enough recess time? They need to run. And so they need to get out and not be sitting for extended periods of time. And so if a student is super, and so I think that if we have the structured classroom and we also have the movement, realistic expectations, maybe their behaviors won't look as bad as we thought. Or maybe it will give them tools to actually just be a person, be a normal child in our classroom. Ensure that they're getting enough recess time. And you can also try tangible accommodations. By that I mean, I don't know if you've seen like those little wobble cushions that students can sit on, or sometimes I've heard of someone putting Velcro, like just one side of the Velcro underneath their desk that they can rub on when they're feeling restless, like right under, yeah, under the front of their desk. Or there's like a kick, like a big fat rubber band called a kick band or something that you can put on their chair to kick on, and just kind of like giving them space to move around a little bit, and allowing for that in our classroom. And also, I have this one here, but just giving students opportunities to tell stories and share what's on their mind. And by that I mean just being attuned to our students and what their interests are, and giving space for childlikeness, okay, in our rooms. I don't think that we should call childlikeness behavior as he is not paying attention, or he's inattentive, or he has ADHD because he's not paying attention. Well, what about maybe, I think we should just take a look at ourselves and say, are my expectations realistic, even for the whole class? Are you with me? Is that fair? So, something to think about there. And then, cause number three, which we had mentioned earlier, is what I'm calling poor instructional strategies. Maybe the student's bored. Maybe I am talking too much, and I need to be asking the students to be interacting with me more. And maybe they need to be having opportunity to practice with in a hands-on way. Maybe you should get out whiteboards and have them actually do something. Give them little blocks to manipulate. You could, if you're going through or going over some work and there are a lot of multiple choice questions, you could give all of your students a card, they could make them a card with A, B, C, and D on it. And then you can ask the question, they can hold up the card, that's the right answer. You could have them show their thumbs up, thumbs down, do they agree or disagree? Just really thinking about our instructional practices and how can we make it interactive, engaging, you know, doing review games, giving opportunity for creativity as well, hands-on projects and that sort of thing. And also, a piece to consider here is, sorry, I'm not putting that up there, is how is your pace? So sometimes, and maybe it would be good to ask someone to give you feedback, is my instruction, is it too slow that students are actually just they're bored or they're checking out? Or am I going so fast and are my expectations too much that they kind of give up because they can't keep up with me? And so is there something else to consider as we, just in thinking about your instruction and finding a way to capitalize on students' interests and creating that need and pulling them in. So all of these things so far really are just good teaching practices, right? But I think that we need to make sure that we have these things in place before we are pointing a finger at a student and saying, there's a problem here. So these first three are things that we as a teacher really have control over, okay? And we can't forget that. We can't forget these things when we're thinking about working with someone who maybe we feel like is having difficulty with inattention or hyperactivity. Okay, so now going on to maybe some of the things that we maybe first think about when we think about inattention and hyperactivity. And you brought this up earlier. Is the student worried about or processing difficult life events? Maybe this has happened to you before. I have a friend who is here at summer term studying the past 5 weeks, and her mom was in the hospital and her health was up and down. And my friend just commented, she's like, she didn't realize how much that impacted her ability to focus in class and to read her things. And so we have to just recognize that those outside things do matter and can really impact our students' learning. Is the student freezing or moving so much because he's feeling uptight or unsettled or anxious or afraid? I had a student this past year who he did a really interesting thing. Whenever he would appear like he's paying attention in class, and when I called on him, he would freeze and he wouldn't say anything. And if I started kind of playing with it a little bit, and I was like, if I went over and told him that I'm going to call on him in a little bit, it seemed to help. Or if I, if he raised his hand, he had an answer. But if I called on him like cold call, like out of the blue, then he would freeze up. And I was like, so what's, you know, I had to dig into this. What's going on here? And he has a traumatic history. He has things in his past. And what was happening, what we came to understand is that it really was kind of a way to protect himself. Like it was a fear thing. He was afraid of being wrong. He was afraid of messing up, and he kind of lived in a lot of fear. And so for me, out of the blue to call on him, it wasn't working. And so I kind of learned maybe I just actually shouldn't call on him out of the blue like that. And for me to actually think more deeply about what's going on here, not just making too many assumptions. Is the student worried about something happening at home? Yes. And I had another student this past year who her brother was going to Bald Eagle Boys Camp, and she herself is adopted as well. And as soon as she thought about this, she would just completely shut down. And it would be like, well, she's not paying attention. She's not getting her work done. And she had so much inner turmoil about this. Like, she was both worried about him leaving, but also kind of relieved about him leaving because of the behaviors that were happening at home. And she was like, didn't know how to process all of this stuff. Okay? I'm worried. I'm relieved, I'm sad, I'm all of these things, and I don't have words for it. And it took us a while to figure out even how we needed to help her, to give her words for this. And at the beginning of the school year, she was a mystery to me. Like, I didn't understand what was really going on. And I tried all sorts of different strategies, okay, to try to help her to stay on track and to just get her work accomplished. And one day, she did this like freeze and shutdown thing, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll just ignore it. today. I was going to kind of see what happens. Like, how long will it last if I just ignore it? And the next thing I knew, we went out to on the way out to recess, and she came back in, and she said that she's hurt and she can't walk, right, on her foot. And I was like, well, none of the teachers had seen this happen. And but she said, like, it hurt so bad, like, she can't walk. And so she hopped down the hall. Like, she hopped the whole way from outside into our classroom, and then we had math class. And I knew she wasn't doing well, but I was like, I'm teaching, I can't, you know, just drop everything. I was like, well, we'll see. So I still kind of just thought I was going to just let it go and see. Because I didn't think that she was really hurt. Like, I was suspicious that it was something else. And so we had math class, it was time for lunch. And I dismissed the students for lunch, and she just sat in her chair. And she wouldn't get up. She said, I can't walk. And so I held her hand, and I said, well, I'll walk with you. And so then she did get up, and she hopped over to the sink to wash her hands. And I said, well, let's come here, and let's talk a little bit. And I asked her, I said, are you worried? Is something wrong? Okay, can you tell me what's wrong? And she didn't have words for it. She didn't know. And she said, and I started asking, like, are you worried about your brother? And she said, yeah. And I was like, oh, good, I have a little bit of direction here. And so I said, how can I help you? How can I help you in this? What could we do that would help? And I asked her if she would like to draw a picture for her brother. Like, she would send him mail sometimes. She's like, her eyes lit up. And she's like, yeah. And so, I mean, everyone else was getting their lunch. She didn't even care. She went to the back table. We got out paper. And I gave her some markers, and she sat there and happily drew. Oh, but before this, I missed a part. I said, okay, I'll get out paper and markers for you. But I said, but I would like you to walk normally over to the table. And she got up and she walked just perfectly fine over to the table and sat down and happily drew her picture. And it brought her out, and the rest of the day, she was better. And so that's one story, but, like, it's a behavior that I tried all the other things. I tried the consequences, and I tried the, maybe if I'm more engaging somehow, I can pull her out. But there was a deeper thing going on, and we are teachers, but sometimes we get drawn into these kinds of things too. And I just want us to think about just digging deeper, asking the questions. Sometimes it takes a long time to really start to understand and have a way forward. So when children are struggling with anxiety or worrying about something or trauma, here's just some suggestions. And again, yeah, ensuring that instruction is clear and organized to lessen students' anxiety. Again, this is the same thing as, like, great classroom management, right? Or great instruction. But whenever your instruction is not clear and it's kind of nebulous, like what you want them to do, or you didn't actually present the math lesson very clearly, it was kind of all disorganized, that creates anxiety for students. And ensure that the classroom environment feels safe again, and focus on building a trusting relationship with the student. Provide some sort of outlet for their worries or concerns, and communicate your observations with parents and ask for their insight. So with the student that I was working with the trauma and the shutting down and worrying about her brother, I was in communication quite a lot with parents, asking, do you have suggestions? What can you help me understand your child better? What do you think is going on? Because parents know their children better than you do, or than I do as the teacher. And so, again, not, as a teacher, it can be easy to say, well, I think I know what's wrong, so it's this problem. And that is, we have to be responders and saying, well, what's going on here? What's underneath this behavior? How can we work together toward a solution? Going on, cause number 5, a lack of training or a character issue. So we had talked about this already. And I had said earlier, but I do think that, especially in an elementary setting, that children do well if they want to. Children do well if they can. Not necessarily that children do well if they want to. And so if we feel like it may be a character thing, and it might be, then I think we can try traditional discipline methods, right? You can try staying in at recess or whatever your consequences are. But if you are doing that and it's not making a difference, then just doing the same thing again and again and again isn't going to change anything, right? So I'll tell you another story about another student. I worked with, this is a third grader this time, a student who was for sure, well, I shouldn't say that. He had the characteristics of ADHD pretty strongly, okay? And while teaching, I constantly had to call his name, pull him in, help him turn around, get him to sit down, to look, to listen, to focus. Like, it was hard, all of those pieces. And he just constantly talked and could not, like, stop talking, okay? It was excessive. And he also was very impulsive and just things would happen before he realized that they happened. And the student came from a very structured home. His parents, you know, he had older siblings who traditional training methods worked for them. And so along comes this younger student, and his parents didn't know what to do with it either, okay? And they, you know, he would get reports from school, it's not going well, and they would use corporal punishment over and over and over again, okay? And that was in second grade. Then I had him in third grade, and as I would talk to him, he was always so repentant. He's like, I'll do it, I'll try to not talk, not to call out in class. And we would go back to work, and 3 minutes later, calling out again, distracted, turning around, all the things. And we would repeat doing this, and this happened over and over, and I was just like, I don't think that it's a rebellion thing. I don't think that he actually is able to fix the problem. Like, I think he wants to, actually, sincerely. But what do you do with that, right? And so this is a situation where his parents felt like more discipline, that's what we need. That should fix it, right? And so we had to have a lot of conversations, and I think I'm going to just not tell you the end of it. I think that we just have to be thinking about, is it more than a character thing? And could it be that the child actually isn't able to do what they full well know that they should? So when we think about this, we can work on training at school. We can, you know, we can pick one specific area to work on, and we can be specific, teach them how we want them to behave. We can focus on, back to cause number one, thinking about how can I structure my classroom in a way that will help them. At the same time, we do need to distinguish between what is my responsibility here and what is parents. And at the end of the day, the parents are the ones that make the final decision, right? You know, we are working with them, and we might have insight. We can graciously, gently offer our input. We also have to be very careful not to judge parents, and we need to be having a working together relationship with them. So When I think about character, I do think that a big piece of that sometimes is determining motivation, like why is this behavior going on? And it takes a lot of wisdom and discernment to wade through that. And another thing, this is just maybe a little bit of an aside, but I do think that parents do the best that they know to do. Or like, no parent is, I think I can say that, no parent is intentionally out to harm or hurt their child. They're doing the best that they know how to do. And so we get to come alongside. And children, all human beings are complicated people, okay? And so we get to be the responders. We get to be asking questions and seeking to work together. All right, cause number six. So maybe you've tried all the things, okay? You've kind of ruled out, you've done everything that you can do as a teacher. You've ruled out it's not really anxiety trauma. You've kind of ruled out that it's a character thing. Maybe it is actually ADHD, right? Maybe there is some kind of genetic brain-based difference going on that is feeding into the behaviors that you're working with. And so when we think about ADHD, there's so many perspectives on this, and I don't feel like I'm an expert at it or on this topic. Something that I have come across recently, or that I have found helpful recently, is to think about ADHD as being a description of behaviors, not a cause or a disease or something like that. It's a description of behaviors. It's excessive, it's inattention and hyperactivity to an excessive degree. And these behaviors could be caused by trauma, a biological chemical imbalance, or by a lack of training. But I don't like to say that one. I mean, that's one way I've been thinking about it. And I don't know if that is, I'm still working on trying to get a clearer glimpse of what I do, like, believe actually about ADHD. But I do believe that there is a place for medication. And let me just explain. I think that sometimes if the inattention and hyperactivity, if the behaviors are so all-consuming and so huge, that medication could help to alleviate the symptoms so that we can work on the training, that we can work on healing from their trauma, or we can work on giving them strategies to be more organized and manage their life. So I think that there is a place for that. Okay, so back to the student I was telling you about with ADHD. We talked a lot with his parents, and at some point, it was a long journey for them to be open to considering the idea of medication. It's a really hard thing for parents. There's a lot going on with that. Anyway, they decided that they were willing to try it, and like, it changed his life. So the student actually, he could sit in his seat, and his handwriting got so much neater because he actually could like control his hand and write. And he, before he would like hop from thing to thing, like even when he was at home and playing, he would never like stick at one thing for more than a few minutes because he was constantly moving around. And he actually like wanted to take it because he felt better, because he realized how it helped him to like function in life better. And so it's not, I'm not one to push medication like that, but I think there's a place for it. And especially when we've considered all the other options and there's still a blaring problem, this is something that could really help. I don't really have time to go into talking more about what ADHD is. That wasn't really my goal in this breakout. My goal is for you to grow as problem solvers, to realize that there is no step-by-step solution to fix problems like this. But yeah, human beings are more complex than that, okay? But I would love for you to consider the whole person, to maybe know what things to think about when you are interacting with your students, all of them actually, okay? And how can we just have classrooms that are thriving? And as teachers, how can we really meet our students' needs well? And so it is possible that a child hasn't been trained at home like they should have been. If that's truly the case, then I feel like you can work on some of those training things at school, but just be sure that is actually what's going on, maybe. Like, just don't forget about the other possibilities. If you're working on training and it's not working, I don't know, just be aware of the other pieces too. So yeah, I hope that you have more things to think about now, probably. So thanks for your attention.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.